On a Friday, it is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. You know, in better times, we'd be going around the state exploring jam-packed event calendars. We'd be planning itineraries for weekend getaways that involve taking in an exhibit in a new community. There is some of that to be had. We're checking back in on the Wisconsin Museum World as it takes steps to reopen amid the pandemic and with difficult financial pressure and uncertainty. What questions do you have about museums adapting to the pandemic? What do you want to know? Is your favorite museum closed because of the coronavirus? How are you trying to continue to support it? We're at 800-642-1234. Greg Vadney is president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. He's also executive director of the Rahr West Art Museum in Manitowoc. Greg, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Kate, thank you so much for having me back on.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. How are museums doing at this point? How are they starting to reopen?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that some of us have reopened. And I guess that we'll start off with a little bit of good news that with a multitude of precautions in some parts of the state, we are seeing some of Wisconsin museums open up for visitors, limited, but they are opening up. To answer the overall question, how are the museums? I wish I had better news, but we're at a critical point for museums. There are massive losses of revenue, I wish the news was better, but it's not.
Well, let's start with your museum. You have reopened. What was the path like to reopening?
Well, it's interesting you say that. We're part of the city of Manitowoc, so we're a municipal museum. And aligned with other city facilities, we have a small municipal zoo here and our Parks and Recreation Department. We put in, beginning in April, a phased plan for reopening. And the museum reopened on June 1st as part of that reopening. Now, our museum encompasses a historic mansion and a connected series of galleries. And we were able to develop a single circuit throughout the museum, which allows for visitors using automatic entry to be able to enter the museum, go through our galleries, go through our mansion, all in a single direction.
Yeah, I was thinking about a Victorian mansion, and I'm you know, scratching my head thinking, how are you
going to get people through it?
Right.
The good fortune is that every gallery and every room of the mansion that we have has multiple entry points. So we were able to create a single circuit that allows for people to go in one direction, from the time they enter to the time they leave without touching anything in the museum and without crossing paths with any other visitors. And then using a multitude of signage, encouraging distancing. We're a small museum, like almost all of the museums in the state. We don't have the staff to be able to police these kinds of regulations. So we're trying to put to use as much signage as possible to make sure that people are keeping distance. We're asking people to wear masks when they come in. And that's how we've gone about it. Now, other museums have taken other different precautions. I've talked to many museums around the state that are by appointment in their first phase. So somebody would have to contact them and set up a time. That allows them to make sure that they're keeping under their maximum occupancy, you know, the augmented maximum occupancies, and it also allows them to trace, you know, to be able to get that registration information from their visitors.
If you're just joining us, we're looking at how museums are adapting right now. Their situation amid the pandemic. Greg Vadney is here, president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums, and he's executive director of the Rahr West Art Museum in Manitowoc. And you can join in. Have you visited a reopened museum recently? What was the experience like? What were you able to do? And did you feel safe? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Greg, is there enough protective supplies and sanitizer to go around?
Well, I think most museums have been pretty resourceful in being able to acquire that. Speaking from my standpoint, I had said we do encourage people to wear masks when they come in. We have masks available that were made available to us. So we've got enough masks. We've created a lot of plexi barriers between staff for registration and potential visitors. And we also, for our purposes, being a municipal, we're able to tap into some resources for supplies. And we've put together a brand new cleaning plan so that even, as I said before, as an art museum, we're not necessarily one of those museums that people are going to be walking around and touching a lot of things, but we did have to eliminate some tactile and hands-on components of our exhibits. But we're able to clean thoroughly and very regularly while we're open.
One of the things we talked about when we last spoke in April is your concern about how children's museums were going to adapt because they are so highly tactile. Kids touch everything. What are the children's museums doing right now?
Well, you hit upon it with cleaning. The children's museums that have opened have to have an appropriately aggressive, but a very, very aggressive cleaning program. I know that the Children's Museum of Eau Claire has put together a plan that only allows for small groups in the same kind of family group to be able to use one exhibit space at a time, and then it's got to be cleaned thoroughly in between. So it's definitely not the experience that you would have had normally in the museum. But for all of our museums, it is a scramble, understanding that we need to modify what we do to be able to serve our public and really to stay alive.
And, you know, staff maintenance work then grows like exponentially, it seems.
And I think for almost all museums, and certainly children's museums, it's all hands on deck. It's that every staff member is now doing some level of maintenance work when it comes to cleaning their facilities. I know I clean here every day.
Let's bring in Marcus now in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Hi, good morning. So I'm going with my friend, and we're taking our children. We're going to the House of Living the Rock today. So really excited about that. First time out going to a museum since COVID. So the other thing I wanted to say is that if we don't start taking responsible, albeit risks, and stepping out and start interacting and start supporting these institutions, we run the real risk of these institutions not being around after this whole thing is done. And so I think we need to take and do it responsibly, but take and start, you know, supporting what we appreciate and love.
Well, Marcus, thank you for calling in, and I'm glad to hear about House on the Rock and your plans today. Greg Vadney is with us, president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. We're checking in on how the museum community is holding up. A shout out to Museum Moments from the Jewish Museum Milwaukee staff and their Jewish history lessons every Tuesday and Thursday at 2 via Facebook Live. The museum itself is temporarily closed. A shout out to Trout Museum of Art in Appleton, which is open to visitors by reservation. I called up the Wisconsin Auto Museum in Hartford. They're open Wednesday through Saturday. They say, come on in. It's a big building, and they track the number of people in their space. Are you supporting your local museum? Join in with a shout out, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Greg Vadney right here on the Ideas Network. It's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Greg Vadney, our guide through the museum world as we learn how they're getting by in these difficult times. He leads the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. Shout out to the Neville in Green Bay. They have amazing dinosaurs through November 8th. What more do you need in an exhibit, right? 10 people at a time for those dinos, though, they say, every 30 minutes. Shout out to the EAA Aviation Museum in Oshkosh, which is closed until further notice out of safety for their staff, volunteers, and visitors. Have you tried exploring virtual tours? Which ones are your favorites? What are your favorite museum memories as a kid? Join in 800-642-1234. Greg Badney here. He's with us from his post at Rahr West Art Museum in Manitowoc. Greg, I want to have you comment there on what Marcus in Milwaukee said about, you know, taking measured risks, getting out there and taking a bit of risk in order to keep it going. And he's going to House on the Rock today, just an iconic Wisconsin attraction.
Yeah, and what Marcus said really, I'm glad you gave me an opportunity to respond because it does bring to light a few different things. And also, some of those shout-outs, I think, help to illustrate. When you're talking about calculated risks, museums on the risk threshold that the CDC has put out are some of the early phase. And part of that reason, the Auto Museum in Hartford, as they said, many of our museums have large galleries. They're large gathering spaces. We've cut the numbers, the maximum occupancy of those galleries down to usually about 25% of normal or lower. And we are encouraging a great deal of space and mask wearing. So as an opportunity for families or for people to get out to visit a museum, is a low-risk activity right now, and we're doing our part to make sure that it is a safe activity. Now, Marcus had also talked about the necessity to go and support these museums or they won't be around, and I want to reiterate that that is a real threat. The International Council of Museums, ICOM, put out a survey back in May. And that almost, I mean, that really does seem outdated now. But back in May, museums self-reported that about 12.5% of museum respondents would not survive this pandemic.
Wow.
That they would close their doors. Here in Wisconsin, in April, the Wisconsin Federation of Museums, along with the Wisconsin Historical Society, put out a survey. And in those survey respondents, about 10% of our museums here in Wisconsin said similar, that they are at risk of closing due to this. Now, you can support a museum by visiting a museum, certainly. And that's our first step. For most museums, that's our first step. Can we get the doors open? Can we get people in? But even if we do that, attendance for museums only contributes about 15% to 10% of our total revenue. So the support organization or the supporting funds for a museum isn't just, can we get our doors open? Can we have somebody come in and pay? So many of the money makers, the revenue generators of museums are public events, whether it's a gala to support the museum, whether it's some of our connections with schools to bring school groups in. I know our neighbors that will be talking to you a little bit later have at the Wisconsin Maritime Museum, part of their revenue plan has always been visits to their submarine and overnights in their submarine. Those are things that can't go on. So for people to support museums, please do, when it's safe to, come and visit the museums. But also, like you had said in the intro bump, visit us online. You can experience a lot of a museum, not everything, but a lot of a museum online, and museums statewide, nationwide, worldwide have taken huge steps over the past few months to bring more of their collections, bring more of what they do online, but also contribute, either personally contribute or help us to work on getting some more public funding to support museums, because operational funding for museums has not been part of the federal support conversation, and it needs to be.
We're checking in on museums, how the response has been in the pandemic and how they're adapting. Greg Vadney is our guide. He's president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. Have you been to a museum lately? as it has reopened. What was the experience like? Do you work or volunteer at a museum? How has the pandemic affected your operations? Is your budget sustainable? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Greg, I want to touch on the protests for a moment. The Veterans Museum in Madison and the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art were vandalized during recent protests that had turned violent near the Capitol. Have other museums around the state suffered any damage?
I believe that the majority of damage were to those two institutions. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. The Wisconsin Veterans Museum, I thought that the reaction of their organization was notable for a few reasons. One, I believe, and I'll paraphrase, that part of the vandalism was written on the wall, "Where is our museum?" And for people from marginalized groups, people of color, oftentimes museums don't seem like a place where they belong. And I know in my career in museums, which is about 15 years long, there's been a constant discussion about inclusion, but it hasn't manifested. And that's a struggle that I think museums statewide, nationwide, are behind on and are working on. But I think over the past few months, the museum reaction, and I think, again, manifested by the statement that the Veterans Museum made afterwards, it was that the Veterans Museum said, "We are a museum for you." But I think they realize, and I think we realize all over the state, that museums believe themselves to be for all. But we need to take more concrete steps. And I wish that I could list to you all the concrete steps that we have planned, but we're still in the infancy. When we go to conferences, when we meet, we still see a very white group that is trying to tell the stories of Wisconsin. And we need to be more inclusive of people of color, of indigenous persons, really, of women, of all minority groups, and all kind of traditionally marginalized groups.
And what I'm hearing is not just in the collections themselves, but in the people who put together the works and the events and the things that go into that museum.
Well, I think we certainly can change what we do in our collections as well, but that needs to be motivated by the people who know, the people whose voice hasn't been in the museums. And I think it's really important. I know in the museum community, one of the things we've talked about a lot is making sure that internships, which have traditionally in nonprofits and certainly in museums been volunteer positions, to make sure that they're paid positions so that, it can be an economic question as much as it is a question of inclusion. And if we're not including people that don't have the independent wealth to be able to do work for free for an extended period of time, then we're not including a lot of our members of society that we need to. So that's one effort that I know museums are serious about. I know my museum is serious about.
I want to ask a practical question here. What happens to the holdings in a museum when a museum is shut down, temporarily closed for an extended period of time? What happens to those exhibits inside, and what is the holdings?
Well, you know, I'd like to say, because museum ethics would say that they would do their best to disperse to other public institutions. But the reality from past experience is that when museums close, oftentimes their collections shift from being in public view to being in private view. Museums, we have to recognize as communities that museums, while they are a great way to spend an afternoon, are not just that. That they're the custodians of who we are, of our communities, of our shared experience. And when they're not supported and when they shut down, our communities lose something, and they lose it permanently. And that's why it is so critical right now for our friends, our citizens, our members, to be advocates for our museums, not only to give on a personal level, but to help us to really provide more backbone in getting federal and state funding to support museums during the time.
Greg, thank you for joining us. Take care.
Thank you.
Greg Vadney, president of the Wisconsin Federation of Museums. He's executive director of the RAR West Art Museum in Manitowoc. For disclosure, RAR West is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we travel to the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc to hear about its reopening to in-person visitors. What are some of your favorite museums to travel to in Wisconsin? Which ones are most important to your family? What's your favorite zoo? 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more Wisconsin Weekend after this news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're going around the state to check in on our cultural institutions, our museum community that's had to dream up new ways to engage beyond their walls in these months of pandemic. With hundreds of museums in our state, they each must develop their own path forward, their own roadmap on how to safely reopen or not. Do you work or volunteer at a museum? How has the pandemic affected your operations? Is your budget sustainable in these times with a drop in admissions and other events? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Abigail Diaz is Director of Education and Programs at the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. Abby, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, take us inside your museum, the Maritime Museum, and the steps you've taken to reopen.
Sure. So we have been reopened since June 4th. And what I appreciate about our approach is that it was really staggered. So we opened limited days, limited hours to make sure that we were safe, that we were clean, that we could protect both visitors and staff. And gradually, we've been able to increase capacity, which has been really exciting. So everything from increased sanitization to limiting capacity within the building and on the submarine, I feel really confident that we are opening a safe museum.
What is it like to manage that submarine? Because that, too, is an enclosed space.
Yeah, it is tricky because it's our number one draw for sure. It's incredible. It's a World War II submarine. It's historically preserved. But it is an enclosed metal tube on the river that's 76 years old, right? So it was a little bit of give and take. So we do require masks on the submarine as an additional precaution. We clean after every single tour that goes through, and we had to cut tour capacity in half. So we only take 10 people out at a time, which I'm sure Greg spoke about this morning. It really impacts our budget because we are only at half capacity, really, from what's really our busy season. But it's more important that we keep everybody safe.
Do you find that with all of the extra cleaning protocols and the care that is being taken all over the museum, that that actually makes a lot more work?
It certainly does. But I think that what we've been able to do is work smarter and not harder. So it's just sticking to a schedule and everybody pitches in. So even though I'm the director of education, I'm still going around and cleaning so that it's not falling on one person or one department. So it's been nice to come together as a team and all have this single priority to have a safe and inclusive museum.
Part of your work is focusing on making your museum accessible to visitors of different backgrounds, different needs. How are you trying to do that, make it more welcoming?
So I'm one of two certified ADA coordinators that work in museums in Wisconsin, which is really exciting. So Dawn at Milwaukee Public Museum and I both are nationally certified with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I think my priority as somebody who is a caregiver to someone with disabilities, my younger brother, and as somebody who has worked in accessibility for a long time, it's making sure that we're inclusive to everyone, but especially people with disabilities. And in my experience, if you make things more accessible to that group of people, they become better for a lot of people. And that can be everything from large print on your panels and your marketing materials to having clear routes for navigation, having better signage, making sure colors are high contrasting. But it also means that I needed to come up with some creative ways to supplement some of the museum experiences that aren't offered right now. Like a lot of our hands-on exhibits have been modified because we don't want, sadly, people down in like the playroom and the water room, because that would just increase risk. So I've had to come up with other ways to engage kids when they visit, or just people in general.
I could imagine that trying to make the environment more inclusive and accessible with COVID-19, that is just making it so much more difficult for that work.
It really is. And it's also tricky because, for example, my brother, who has disabilities, he's at a higher risk. So people that are at a higher risk or are immunocompromised, they're not coming to museums. And that doesn't mean that I don't want to serve them. So in addition to having offerings in the building, we've really had to think about our digital engagement and how to reach people beyond the museum walls, right? And that extends beyond when we were closed. We need to continue to do that work because not everybody is able to come to a museum right now.
We're talking about museums reopening on Wisconsin Weekend. Abby Diaz is here from the Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. You can join in. What museums are you going to now? Do you work or volunteer at a museum? Is it able to be open to you? What are some of your favorite places, museums to visit in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Abby, the Maritime Museum offers sensory backpacks. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. So this was one of the ways that we thought we could still engage kids and people. So sensory backpacks are developed with people who are on the autism spectrum in mind, but they're great for a lot of different people. So they're free to check out. It's a backpack at the front desk. You just say that you'd like to reserve one. And it includes some hands-on things like fidgets. It includes a weighted vest. It includes headphones. Some of the areas of the museum can be a little noisy. Like we have a triple expansion steam engine that can be quite alarming to a lot of people. So headphones. And then it also includes some pictures of our exhibits and a communication book. So if you're nonverbal or have a hard time expressing yourself vocally, there's a book that I wrote that you can just point to things that include simple commands. I want to go to the shipwrecks exhibit. I need to go to the restroom. And then it also includes something called a social story, which is a first-person narrative that really walks you through a museum visit for somebody who maybe hasn't done it before, that's a little nervous. So social stories were written for people with autism to prepare them for an experience that might be new or different. So these are all in a backpack and available for free checkout at the museum.
What was it like for you to write that book?
So it was, it's important for me because my brother has autism that we offer these sorts of things, because I worked in 13 museums across 4 states in my career so far. And Daniel, my brother, has gone to every museum with me. And I have seen firsthand how inaccessible museums can be sometimes. And I don't think that it's purposeful, but I think that people don't know what they could be offering, right? So part of my job as an advocate and an ally is to say, this is an easy thing that you can do. So it's important for me to do it and be vocal about how to do it. how to write these communication books and stories, because it directly makes visits so much better for people. And it's such an easy thing. So it's always fun to write and it's always fun to talk about, because I'm happy to help other places do the same thing, to help people like my brother enjoy museums because he wants so badly to love museums.
Mm. Your museum is also undertaking this effort to diversify the voices being heard about our state's shipwreck history. How are you trying to accomplish that?
So I think, you know, if you look at maritime culture, a lot of the things that have been written have been about, it's a pretty male-dominated field. And that's not always the case. So what we are publishing about it or what we're talking about is male dominated, but there's a lot of other voices that have contributed to this narrative. And I think historically our museum hasn't done the best job of amplifying those diverse voices, but it's in the past 2 years, we've really made an effort to celebrate Black voices in the maritime narrative and highlighting women captains and talking about American Indians being the first people on our waterways. These are all things that we hadn't talked about that I'm really proud that we're now talking about. So recent work has included exploring shipwrecks that were involved on the Underground Railroad, for example.
How is that link? Tell us about that.
Sure. So in particular, there's one wreck pretty close by the museum. It's right between Manitowoc and Sheboygan called The Home. It was a schooner that sank right before the Civil War, but it was previously owned by an abolitionist who was well known for using his vessels to help enslaved people get to Canada, to freedom. So at the time that it sank, it was owned by someone else, but it did have this long history of likely being involved in the Underground Railroad. It's hard to prove because if you're successful, you don't get caught, right? Mm. But that captain and that ship owner were caught other times with other vessels. And they also, it's pretty well documented that they were involved and they were known as a people you could go to for help. And that's just one example of several in the Great Lakes. So there's, I just started doing this research maybe a couple months ago, but it's a fantastic history of how the maritime landscape really linked together the Underground Railroad and was that final step up to Canada, which is really exciting.
Abby Diaz is Director of Education and Programs at the Wisconsin Maritime Museum. We're talking with her. She's giving us a glimpse inside her museum in Manitowoc and the work there. A shout out to Children's Museum of Eau Claire. They're open Monday through Friday. The Milwaukee County Zoo is in a phase one reopening. That means visitors must arrive at their reservation time to ensure a safe capacity is not exceeded. And a shout out to the Whitewater Historical Society's Depot Museum of Local History, closed indefinitely. What can you share about a special museum in your community? What suggestions can you offer museums in this stressful time? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Abby Diaz here on the Ideas Network. It's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The spread of the coronavirus has caused countless cancellations, postponements. So many event calendars say, see you in 2021. A shout out to Black Arts Fest MKE, postponed until next August. The Madison Museum of Contemporary Art is holding a virtual art fair this weekend. Have you tried a virtual tour? What did you check out? Have you visited a reopened museum recently? What did you see? We're still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We're with Abby Diaz, Director of Education and Programs at the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. Abby, earlier you were talking about virtual and digital being so important to museums right now. What are you seeing there in terms of your museum reaching out electronically?
So when we were closed, we really focused on digital engagement, and it became such a core part of our education department that we've really tried to continue with that. So it includes things like curriculum, uploading free curriculum for people to download. We also started a weekly web series called Pretty Good News. And one of our educators gets on there and just shares good maritime news and interviews people. It's so stinking cute. Just it's really adorable. So he'll interview different people from around the state. And they just share some good things that are happening, because there's so much not great things happening that we wanted to share a little good news. And I'm happy to say that that's supported by the Wisconsin Humanities Council. So we were given a grant to help fund that, which is really exciting.
Do you do you find that that type of engagement online on your website is something that will open up and make your museum more accessible to others?
I really do think so, but I caution museums from thinking that that reaches everybody, because we still do have a large percentage of our community and our state that doesn't have access to the internet at home or have access to laptops. And some of us take it for granted, right? I know I certainly catch myself doing that. So in addition to offering digital engagement, we have to also think about expanding our mission outside of the museum with things like maybe curriculum checkout kits or physical things that people can take and maybe not bring back because you can keep them. So it has to be both. But certainly, yes, I think we've devoted more time to online engagement, and it's been really well received.
In our last minute together, I just want to pick your brain a little bit, because just north of Manitowoc and Two Rivers is one of your favorite museums, the Hamilton Woodtype and Printing Museum. What do you love about it?
It is... So I'm not from Wisconsin. I'm from Virginia. And when I think of a museum that sums up Wisconsin, I think Hamilton Woodtype. It is, and I say this with so much love as somebody who lives in Wisconsin, it is quirky and weird, but lovable. It's just artistic, but also historical. And I think, you know, it's just this small town museum that nobody really hears about, but it's this fantastic collection of wood type from a century, from old newspapers, from Ripley's Believe It or Not and Barnum and Bailey's Circus. So it really captures a moment in time, but then they do modern printing and printmaking. And it's one of the best gift shops other than mine, I think, in Wisconsin. It is, I just think it's the quirkiest, weirdest place. And I just love the staff. I love the atmosphere there. So if people come to the Manitowoc area, I recommend RAR West, the Maritime Museum, and Hamilton. And you can just continue on up the coast and make a whole day of it.
I love it. And, you know, I want to give a shout out to their Hamilton Hangs. They happen on Zoom every Friday, and including today. And they just hanging out with their friends in the print design and type worlds. They do the Zoom call. And today they're hanging out with Typoteca Italiana in Italy. So, I mean, how cool is that?
It is the coolest. They are the best people. And it is so nice to work in sort of this little cultural corridor between the couple of museums that we have here in the area. It's just a lovely community to be a part of. And I'm so thankful that we moved up here and have been a part of this little microcosm of what's happening here. It's like really exciting.
Abby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Abby Diaz, Director of Education and Programs at the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc. For disclosure, the museum is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Steve Gotcher with a story about a beloved doctor who found joy and comfort in the study of birds.
Saving lives is something a doctor does. Patty C. shares this story of a Western Wisconsin physician whose life-saving skills extended beyond humans to the animal world as well.
Generations of Chippewa Falls children knew family doctor Charles Kemper as the Birdman. Southside kids like me often rode our bikes through the alley behind his house just to get a glimpse of the caged raptors he fostered. Now 100 years old, Doc Kemper was an MD for so long. The babies he delivered grew up to have babies, and he delivered those too. As a licensed volunteer for U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Doc captured birds on his own 80 acres and attach tiny stainless steel ankle bracelets around even tinier legs. Doc spent 7 decades banding 110,000 birds. His first interest in feathered friends was sparked out of boredom as an Army Air Corps flight surgeon crossing the Pacific, often skirting a typhoon that churned up 3-story waves.
For 30 days, we crossed the ocean. I don't think Contiki took much longer. On the days we were allowed on deck, I spent much of my time on the stern, watching the seabirds. Here, thousands of miles from land, there were always a few birds in sight. Fulmars, petrels, and shearwaters. When you're all alone, just a speck floating on a great ocean, you soon find a kinship to other living things that keep you company.
World War II ended while Doc was at sea. After his military service, he and his wife settled in Chippewa Falls, and Doc began his career as a country doctor. For over 40 years, he made house calls, almost unimaginable given today's HMOs. Doc founded the Chippewa Wildlife Society to promote sanctuary and refuge to animals. Word spread. A farmer once showed up in Doc's office cradling a colt with a broken leg. A veterinarian suggested putting it down, but Doc set the leg with 4 Reader's Digest magazines and a plaster cast. While one of his human patients was in labor, Doc carried an injured chipmunk in his lab coat pocket. He swears that mother named her baby Chip. From 1957 to 2002, Doc visited a local TV tower daily during spring and fall migrations to count birds that had collided with the thick guy wires. The worst night, he says, birds fell from the sky like rain. Who can imagine the horror of counting over 10,000 dead bodies by hand? Doc says, I guess if I wasn't such a nut, I wouldn't have bothered with it. To call Doc a birder is like saying Fred Astaire was a fine dancer or Kobe Bryant was a pretty good ball player. There's no telling the number of lives Doc Kemper helped save, from young soldiers to Chippewa County residents, human and animal, to billions of birds flying through Wisconsin, cared for and counted by the Birdman.
To this day, I can shut my eyes, feel the swell of the ocean, the roll of the ship, and see shearwaters and albatross on stiff wings skimming over the waves. To them I owe a great debt. They initiated me into a wonderful life's avocation, watching birds.
Patty C. is a writer from Lake Halley near Eau Claire. Her blog, Our Long Goodbye, One Family's Experiences with Alzheimer's Disease, has been read in over 90 countries. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin, in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Steve Gotcher.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.